Today on The Grave Talks, the historic Hannah House, a conversation with Brooke Boyer and Bud Kelly. The historic Hannah House in the heart of Indianapolis, Indiana, has many secrets within its walls. Alexander Hanna had gone west to find his fortune during the gold rush. After returning home to Indiana, he built this stately mansion. It is now a testament to a bygone era, with 24 rooms steeped in history and mystery. It is believed that Alexander harbored a secret role in the Underground Railroad, sheltering runaway slaves in his mansion's basement. Is there any truth to the story that tragically one fateful night disaster struck and the cellar became the final resting place for those seeking freedom? Whispers of the past still linger within its walls. Some say the spirits of those lost souls, including Alexander, still roam the halls, haunting visitors to this day. Today on The Grave Talks, the historic Hannah House, with Brooke Boyer, paranormal investigator and volunteer, and Bud Kelly, event coordinator. Bud and Brooke, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to talk about the historic Hannah House in Indianapolis. I'm going to start with you, Bud. Tell me a little about what you do and how long you've been involved with the house.
This is going to be a long answer.
That's okay. That's okay.
I've been with the house a little over 11 years. It kind of got started. I was on a paranormal team years and years ago, and we loved doing fundraisers. And we did a fundraiser, or actually we did a few of them at the Hannah House. And I got to know the people there. Then all of a sudden it's like they reached out to me and asked if I could help them, like if I could help them out with the paranormal part of it. Like, what would it take to get paranormal teams in there, you know, and helping them out, you know, and kind of hosting that part of it. And then I was kind of getting invited to help out with the open house tours and, you know, just to help set up, just to, you know, hang out and just to hang out with everybody. And, then all of a sudden the guy that was doing the tours was kind of flaking out, and I knew the history, but I wasn't real deep with it. You know, I knew the urban legends and I knew about Alexander, but that was about it. So then I was kind of, then it got to the point, it was kind of like, hey bud, you got to do a tour. And at that time I did not like speaking in front of people. It's just one of them things. No, I don't like doing it. No, I hate this. No, this sucks. You know, no. So then I just, you know, buckled up and did it. You know, I started learning as much of the history as possible. Learning about everyone that's lived there, all the families, and, you know, and how Alexander got started and how he passed away, what happened to the house after he passed away. And then all of a sudden I just kind of created my own thing. And then I was doing tours for about 10 years by myself. Then, years down the road, then, I met somebody named Kira. And Kira was helping me out here and there, and she became a great addition. And then during certain paranormal events is how I met Brooke. Then Brooke actually came to one of our events one night, her and her friend Judy. And me and Brooke hit it off instantly. I mean, we always talked to each other. Yeah, I mean, we just hit it off just really well. And, then after a while, you know, me and Brooke kind of, you know, started talking, you know, and we at another event, we kind of chatted a little bit, and she was kind of like, hey, if you ever need help, give me a call. And I was kind of like, eh, well, I might, you know. So there was one day I started the tours again, cause you know, we went through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, so after the pandemic, we kind of, got the tours back going, and I hit up Brooke and I was like, hey, you want to start helping me? You want to start helping with tours? You know, I could use another tour guide. So she came on board and she started doing a lot of work outside, flowers and planting and really, and I mean, really kind of went above and beyond of what, you know, what anybody expected. Then I started a podcast 2 years ago and I always kind of wanted a co-host, you know, because the podcast has a really weird dynamic. And how it works with me and Brooke is that I'm a skeptic and she's the believer. So it's the conversations get really, really kind of, you know, interesting. And so then all of a sudden it's like, you know, then back to where we were talking about internet problems. And because I live in a little small town below Indianapolis. So all of a sudden she come up with the idea. It's like, hey, let's start doing the podcast at the house.
Oh,
you know, and just to get everybody kind of like interested. Hey, we're at the house now, you know, this is where we're recording a podcast. And then we get to tell people about, you know, hey guys, you know, this Sunday's the history tours, come on down. And, you know, so we're able to use the podcast kind of in a very positive way
to help the house too, you know?
Yeah, we get to promote the house. Yeah. We get to...
What's the name of the podcast?
Paranormal Vantage Point.
Paranormal Vantage Point. Can people listen wherever they listen to podcasts?
On YouTube and iHeartRadio.
Okay. So, Brooke, you have a background in paranormal investigations, too.
I do.
So tell me a little about your background.
With paranormal investigating or the house?
Let's start with paranormal investigating, because that kind of led you to the house.
I was around like 8 or 9 years old when I had my first paranormal experience, and I actually seen a full apparition of an older man. When I got older, I, you know, had looked through some, you know, photo albums and some old photos, and I told my mom, I was like, this is the guy I seen. And she was like, well, that's not possible. And it was my dad's dad, and he actually had passed away. So it was my grandfather on my dad's side, and he had actually passed away like right before I was born. So, but it always kind of got me thinking, you know, more about the afterlife. And I was always told, you know, ghosts and monsters and all that stuff wasn't real growing up. You know, your parents try to protect you from, you know, scary things. And clearly, I knew that they were lying about that, because I seen a ghost. And, you know, it just kind of always made me dig a little bit deep, want me to dig deeper into, you know, the afterlife and, you know, where does our soul go, and, you know, spirits lingering on, you know, on Earth after, you know, they pass. And, you know, I started digging into the paranormal field. And I had actually looked into a few, you know, paranormal teams as I got older into, you know, my 20s, and couldn't really click with anybody. And I'm not saying anything bad about other paranormal teams. I don't do that. But there are some people out there that I think, you know, fabricate the truth, and, you know, they're just in it for the fame, and, you know, they're not really that interested in it like I was, you know. And I was actually doing volunteer work at the Hannah House over one summer into fall, and just going over there and like helping out, clean out the yard and stuff like that, and clean up the inside of the house. And I was sitting out back, and they were selling tickets at the house for a public hunt. Well, because I had, you know, been helping out there, I was able to have access to getting a ticket. So I bought a ticket, and this lady walks up the back, and her name was Judy. And we started talking, and she actually has written a couple books on the paranormal. Her first book is pretty much based off her life, you know, as a child through childhood, and then her younger adult years to, you know, present day, and her paranormal experiences. So it's really cool. But I was talking to her and we just clicked, and she actually has, you know, had started a paranormal team, Indiana Lost Souls Paranormal, and I've been a part of that team for the past 10 years. And, you know, we finally got our own logo going, and, you know, I've been to a lot of pretty crazy places with Judy. You know, I call her Dutchie, because her author name was Dutchie Malloy. And so I call her Dutchie, and she calls me her Duchess of, you know, the paranormal or whatever. But we have a lot of fun together, and, you know, I've met a lot of people in the paranormal field. You know, I've met Bud, and I wouldn't even say it's paranormal field. I'd say it's a paranormal community, because it's like, you know, we're all kind of family, you know, you meet so many different people in the paranormal field, but very interesting, to say the least, for sure. But it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I did a couple events at the Hannah House, you know, helped out with volunteer work. I met Bud, and, you know, I've done a couple investigations there. You know, Bud has never had an experience at the house. Me, however, I have had quite a few experiences at the house. So it's been a fun journey. I've really enjoyed it.
It's kind of like both your paths were, you were just supposed to meet at this particular place at this particular time.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
I agree with that.
It's kind of like twin flames. Like your souls just kind of meet up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were always supposed to, and it involves the Hannah House.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it was supposed to be. Now, I want to talk about the paranormal there, obviously, but first I want to start with the history of the house. This is really one of those houses, I think, when you're driving down the street, because I do this all the time, I'm like, that house is so haunted. You just drive by it and you think that.
Time.
I would drive by this house and say that out loud.
Oh, yeah.
Can you describe a little about what the house looks like when it was built, and talk about Alexander and him building this house?
Alexander built a home in 1858. He was born in Wayne County, Indiana. And that's east of Indianapolis. And his father, Samuel, was actually kind of like a big time, like he was into politics. He was a head of the Indiana Railroad. So, I mean, the family was kind of, I don't know if I want to use the word powerful, but they were very well known. And so Alexander, really, from what you kind of read about him, it's almost like, you know, he never really had a silver spoon in his mouth. You know, he was a trained harness maker. Then he went out to the California Gold Rush for different business ventures. He, you know, mined for gold. He even came up with different, like, farming techniques. So he made a lot of money during the gold rush, come back and purchased right around 300 acres of farmland off his father. Then he was able to build the mansion. You know, and he stayed a bachelor for a very long time.
And by a very long time, like he was in his 50s, wasn't he?
I believe he got married when he was 51.
That is a long time for that. I mean, being in
turned 50, and I'm single, and I feel great.
But back then, that was pretty unusual. You know, people got married at 20.
I agree 100%. It really was. That is absolutely correct.
And I'm single too, by the way, Bud, so I'm not here to judge anybody.
Yeah, but Alexander, he was 51 when he got married, and he didn't get married till 1871. And the weird thing about Alexander, and I don't want to say weird, okay, because, I mean, times were different back then compared to today. Because today, you know, we got social media, we can find anything we want to find. But when it comes to Alexander, you cannot find one photo of him.
Really?
You cannot find any you know, the only information, that actual documentation we have. And I'm talking about even at the house, you know, so, you know, we know when the house was built. We know when he passed away. We know where he passed away.
I'm sorry, but I'm not trying to interrupt you. But with that period of time, though.
It's okay. I'm used to it.
he's always got to say something to me. But yeah, no. Back, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is back in the day, in that time period, there weren't a lot of pictures taken of people.
No, but
now, there was post-mortem pictures taken.
Yes, yes.
And it took a lot of money to take photos back in the day, and that's why mainly a lot of the photos that you see back in the day, it was either, you know, war pictures or post-mortem pictures.
Or they were a wealthy family who could afford it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they were a family of means. So...
Yes.
Oh, yeah. They
it
were
does
wealthy.
Seem like there would be a picture, even of him in his later years. Because you're right. In the 1840s, 50s, that would be pretty early for photos, right?
But even back in that time, though, it's like, my personal opinion, and it's like I said, because there's not a lot of information about Alexander. I mean, there is, but there's not a ton. But I personally believe that he was just a type of guy that, and again, this is my opinion. I'm not going on facts, okay? I'm just going on about what I feel. And I believe he was just like, he was one of those type of people that loved to lay low.
Mm.
You know, that didn't like being like kind of in the spotlight, you know, that's just kind of how I take it. You know, how he was.
Now, when he did get married, though, it sounds like he was in love with his wife, at least from what I've read.
Yes. You
know, their marriage was good, right?
Yeah, they had a solid marriage.
And
they had
a very solid marriage. So she must have been younger because at some point they had no children, but she did have a miscarriage.
She did not
That's
have a miscarriage.
That's actually not...
Not so true. she did give birth to a little girl, and so the whole family is actually buried at Crown Hill Cemetery.
Not the whole family, just part.
There's like one or two brothers that aren't buried there. They're buried somewhere else, but the Samuel and Eleanor, Hannah's parents, and then two brothers and a family member, a friend of the family, Mary is
Mary
buried
Bond.
There.
Yes.
And then if you look over by Elizabeth Jackson, his wife, if you look over by her and Alexander, there is a little tombstone and it says Elizabeth Hannah. And that's the baby. And she was like 3 days old, 2 or 3 days old when she passed away. So a lot of people have came in and they're like, oh, I heard it was a stillbirth. I heard it was a miscarriage or, you know, this and that. That's not true. They actually did have a child, but she unfortunately didn't make it. She was only about 2 or 3 days old when she passed.
And we'll talk about this when we get to the paranormal, but there was a reason I wanted to mention about the child.
Okay.
Because I've read some stuff that there's been the sound of a child crying has been heard in the house. I don't know if that's true.
I've personally never witnessed that.
He's never had any experiences in the house. Me, however, I've had experiences, but that's not something that I've experienced. I can't speak for any other, you know, group. That's
yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying I've never.
Right. I've never experienced that. I have heard a child down in the basement. I've never heard a baby. And I'm glad because I'd probably start crying.
That would freak me out. The maternal part of you, that caring, like, oh, I've got to find the source of this. This is distressing to me.
Yeah,
so
I would start thinking about my daughter and then I'd be like, oh my gosh.
And one other thing that I read, and this will also come into the paranormal part, and we'll get into that in a minute, was that Alexander was an abolitionist. And I read, once again, I'm never always sure about everything I read, that he had helped slaves through the Underground Railroad. Have you found any?
That is one of the urban legends there, yes.
Yeah, so it could be legend could have happened.
So back in the day, it's very possible that, you know, it was a part of the Underground Railroad because a lot of Quakers back in the day, they... you know, helped harbor slaves and, you know, keep them safe and help them get to through the Underground Railroad. So Alexander, he was not a Quaker by choice. He was a birthright Quaker. But it is still very possible. I mean, he had a lot of land. I mean, back when it was originally built, and he bought the property off of his father, Samuel, there was only, I believe, like 350 acres. He ended up purchasing more land, and it was over, I think, 575 acres. I mean, it was, I mean, he had,
yeah, by the time he was done, yeah.
Oh yeah, he had a lot of property. So, and if you, so the, I believe it's the east side of the property, there is a cellar door that is pretty actually well hidden. So it's very possible, you know, they could have, you know, went down there. That would be their main entry, and then they would, you know, hang out in the basement and, you know, get some food and shelter and, you know, hang out and just rest. So as far as the fire that happened, I don't believe that the fire happened, just because if you look at the basement, the original beams are still there, and you can tell there's been no fire damage. I'm not saying it's not possible, because it hasn't been documented, and you know, a lot of people ask, well, why wouldn't they document that? Well, why would they, you know, because then he'd be prosecuted, and then he'd get in, you know, a lot of trouble,
right?
And even worse, I mean, they were pretty ruthless.
I mean, that was like, I mean, it was,
they would have killed him.
Yeah, I mean, I even back in that time, even if you harbored, like Brooke mentioned, I mean, even during that time, if you were harboring slaves, you were harboring someone's property. And Alexander could have been executed for that. It's kind of sad because, you know, we got stories, but we also have urban legends. We don't have, and you couldn't document that stuff at that time. Like when I do the history tours, and when Brooke does the history tours, I have, you know, I will use the word, it's an urban legend. You know, I can't prove to you that it happened. But I mean, but it's still a story that's been handed down to us.
Urban legends start somewhere. This story has been passed down for years. I believe Paul even mentioned, Bud, that he had heard about the stories when he was a kid. So, and it's pretty much been the same story. You know, it was part of the Underground Railroad. You know, supposedly one night, you know, there was some slaves down there, and oil lantern accidentally got knocked over, and they died from burns and smoke inhalation. Well, because it was illegal to harbor slaves, and he couldn't give them the proper Christian burial that he would have wanted to give them. He had to bury them down in the basement. You know, of course, he doesn't want to see people to see him take him. I'm not trying to laugh because it's funny, but you know, he's not going to take bodies out of his house, you know, and people see, oh, okay, well, you're harboring slaves, you're in trouble now. So
but then it's like, okay, like Brooke mentioned though, but I mean, and I'm not saying this because I'm a skeptic, I'm saying it because I mean, it's almost like even the urban legends around the counties where I live, it's almost like you need a good urban legend to make a good ghost story too. So it's almost like, I'm not saying things are fabricated, but I live not too far from the Morgan Monroe Forestry. Okay, well, ever since I was a kid, we always had an urban legend called the Black Lady's Ghost. And it's not because of the color of her skin, it's because she dressed in black. And supposedly that her baby died, and she would dig the baby up from the grave and rock it to sleep. But they say you could always see her ghost at certain times of the night. So it's almost like there's always been that story ever since I was a little kid. So, and like I'm saying, I'm not saying things are fabricated, but sometimes people will fabricate something to create a good ghost story, you know? And that's just kind of like where I'm at, because even though I'm a skeptic, I'm the critical thinker, I'm the one that needs the evidence. You know, I'm that guy.
Well, there's a lot of people that are, it's that have brought to my attention because they'll ask me during tours, they're like, well, I heard that Alexander was found guilty of harboring slaves and they hung him off the south porch. And I was like, that south porch wasn't there.
Wasn't put on until after he passed away. The house.
So now, that is false.
And that seems like something that would have been documented.
Correct. That would have been, yes, that would have been documented. Very true.
But it was also documented that he had passed from, I believe, cardiac failure. I think he had a heart attack, bud.
And he passed away inside the home.
Yes. So, and Elizabeth did not die giving birth, and she didn't have a stillbirth, and she actually passed away quite a few years later after giving birth. So, yeah, and there's correct. A lot of people that say, you know, it's the house that smells of rotting flesh. No, it smells like an old
home. It smells like a house that was built in 1858.
Yeah, it smells like an old home. I've never had any bad experiences in that house. There has been some people that have came in and they've, you know, had the complete opposite. And I can't speak for them, but it's definitely the haunts that I've experienced there and the, you know, the stuff that's happened. I've never felt anything bad. It's been more of like a softer haunt for me. It's almost like you walk into the house and you feel welcome.
Oh, that's interesting. Especially when I read this.
I will say, even then when you're there by yourself, like, you know, like me and Brooke, we both have keys. We both can, you know, go and leave whenever we, you know, like opening up for tours and stuff like that, letting paranormal teams in. But it's almost like even if you walk through the house by yourself, you have this, you can feel the positive energy in the air.
I remember one experience I had. I was actually there and I was cleaning with an old friend of mine because she said she wanted to help out with me volunteering. So I brought her to the house one day and we were cleaning the inside and we had, you know, music going and stuff. And it was a really nice day in fall. And I was cleaning the stairs, you know, the banister and everything and getting in between the poles. And, I was at the very top of the stairs and Maria, so the Ehlers owned the house, Roman and Maria, they owned the house. They purchased it after Alexander passed away. So he passed away in 1895 and they bought the house in
1899.
I thought it was.
Yeah. Roman bought it.
Okay.
No, Roman bought it in 1899.
Okay. So they purchased the house, and Roman was actually a very well-known jeweler in the Indianapolis area. He was pretty much like close to like the Tiffany's and company back in the day. You know, I mean, he was.
I love
was
how very, you compare Roman to Tiffany's.
Yeah. Well, because he was very well-known back in the day.
Very well at what he did. He was.
There's actually still some of his stuff. Like his little old like trinkets and stuff like that to like tools to fix jewelry and stuff like that still at the house. And it's kind of cool seeing it now versus if you look at pictures of what it looks like today, it's completely different.
Even his grandfather clock's still in the house.
Yeah. And from his jewelry store is actually in the house. So that's a really unique, you know, feature to the house. And it says Washington Street on it, because that's where his jewelry business was. And the N's on Washington are actually backwards. And it's just kind of something fun to point out to people. And everyone's like, well, why? And I'm like, I don't know. But I think that this was a trial and error. And that's probably why it's here, because it's a defect. And he was like, it's too pretty to let go. So I'll just keep it at the house, maybe. I don't know if that's true, but I would assume that's why the clock is there, because it is it's a beautiful clock and it still works. So they actually had a daughter, Romina, and she married into the Elder family, you know, and she had three sons and a daughter, and the Elder family is who owns the house now. And they have it split up, you know, different shares and stuff, you know. But they own the property to this day. So only three families have owned the property.
Oh, isn't that something?
Since 1858.
That's something. So, and a lot of times those houses ended up being boarding houses or a hospital, especially during the Civil War, or there was a sanatorium maybe or a nursing home. But this has been a residence.
Yeah.
Up until it's not a residence.
But it was an
now.
Antique store in the 70s.
Okay. For, so it did have a little detour.
For 10 years. 10 years it was an antique
store. They rented the house out to a family by the last name of O'Brien. And the O'Briens had an antique store at the bottom part of the house, and they lived in the upper part.
Because it's plenty big enough. That's a big,
very big. They actually, so in the 70s when they rented it out to them, it was pretty much like a year or two later after Romina, because, you know, she just, I talked to Paul about it, and he's the property manager, and he's actually the son of Romina's daughter, Dot.
Dorothy.
You know, so he's been able to actually tell me quite a bit about the house, because he used to live there when he was a kid. So it's been interesting hearing some of the stuff he's talked about too. But I mean, he talks very highly of Romina. He was like, my grandmother was she was pretty awesome. So it's nice hearing some of his stories of his childhood. And she actually had pet geese on the property at one point. but she, you know, just got too old, and it was hard for her getting up and down the stairs to her bedroom. So Romina ended up moving out. And a couple years later, because I believe that's when they were thinking about selling the property, and they decided not to. They were against it, so they kept it. And that's when the O'Briens came to them, and they wanted to rent out the property and the house and start an antique store. We've actually talked to Cheryl. She's told us about, because we've heard, you know, a couple ghost stories about, you know, the little girl that was with the O'Brien family. She was in the O'Brien family, and she had some experiences there. And when Bud was doing a tour one day, she was like, yeah, that was me. I was that little girl. And she was a part of the tour. And it was just like, wow, it's such a, like, she still lives on this side of town and everything. That's pretty cool, you know? So, but she actually told us.
That moment felt like I met the Beatles.
It was just like, you felt like you met like a true rock star. It was like, oh my gosh, we've heard about you. Like, this is really cool, you know? So, and she shared some of her experiences. You know, she said she used to play with this little girl. And I found that really wild, because I never heard that. I heard her talk about a man. And I want to say it was Alexander. She feels like she saw, because the way he was dressed would fit with that time period. You know, she's told us that story, but when she had brought up the little girl, I was like, that's really wild, because down in the basement, I heard a little girl's voice. Couldn't make out what she was saying, but I definitely heard a little girl down in the basement, and my friend Judy had actually caught it on EVP, but that was many, many years ago. So we'd have to dig into a whole bunch of files to try to find it. But, we definitely did catch something down there, and it was pretty, pretty wild. So when she said she used to play with a little girl, but there wasn't a little girl.
These days, the house is primarily used as like a wedding venue or events you could have, or investigations, but nobody lives on the property, right?
No, yeah, nobody lives there.
It's just historical at this point.
Yeah, it's been a part of the historical society since the late 70s. So, yeah, so the house is used for any kind of event, weddings, birthday parties. And we do host paranormal investigations there.
And on the paranormal investigations, I was reading somebody who had done an investigation there. And they were saying that there had been reports of paranormal activity going back a long time. Like you just mentioned, the woman who might have seen Alexander and a little girl. And that probably went back quite a few years. I don't know how old she is now.
Okay, now when I was mentioning earlier about how stories get twisted through the years, the story was always told that she saw a man. She was downstairs playing, but she saw a man upstairs. Okay, so when I met her in person during the tour, and then she said, well, that little girl was me. And she says, but here's the thing. The story goes on how she saw a man in older clothing upstairs. She goes, that's not even true. She goes, I saw him, which kind of she was pointing towards where the family room is. And she goes, I always saw the man in older clothing sitting in a rocking chair right there. And I thought it was Grandpa. And which would have been Mr. O'Brien. And she said, so, and then she goes, and my grandma would be yelling, who are you talking to? And she says, the older man right there. She says, I'm talking to Grandpa. And then she will even admit that she goes, but you know, I was so young, I don't remember what I said word for word, but Grandma always remembered what I said. So she says, well, your grandpa's not here. He's out getting paint because they did a lot of renovations at the house. So yeah, she said, no, she said, but the story goes, I saw, and she's telling me this face to face. So, and that's the cool thing about Cheryl. I mean, yeah.
And it happened to her. And a lot of times these stories are kind of like that game of telephone where I whisper it in your ear, you whisper it in Brooke's ear, Brooke whispers it, and then it comes back a different story than
totally
what
different.
Started. And I want to ask you, Bud, because you are a skeptic, but you're very involved in what's known as a very haunted house in the area. It's known to be very haunted. Uh-huh. I think it's no secret.
No.
So do you feel like with your skeptical eye that you're leaning like it definitely is haunted? You just haven't had anything happen to you? Or what's
that? Is a very, very good question. Because when I first started going to the house, okay. And like I said, when I started going there, I was just doing fundraisers. You know, I was just helping out with events. Like when I started the paranormal thing, and I actually, and even the team I was on, we were the skeptics. We were the debunkers. Okay, that's what we did. Being at the house, like I've always known the ghost stories and always heard, always, you know, the urban legends, and then started listening to other people's experiences. I'm even the type of guy, if you know me personally, though, I've never called anybody a liar, or I've never, that doesn't happen. That doesn't, you know, I'm not one of those people. Even though I'm a skeptic, I still keep an open mind to what something maybe could happen. But it's like always at the house, it's like for me, like even after all the years I've been there, and all the times I've done tour, all the tours I've done, and I've been in that house by myself, and it just, no, I've never witnessed anything that I would say paranormal. Like, for example, like when I just mentioned talking to Cheryl, I've listened to her, and she brought her dad one day, and her dad mentioned, you know, the stuff he witnessed. So, I mean, it is interesting listening to other people, you know, but then people are really shocked, and it's funny to look at their face when they go, so, hey man, I'm like, what do you experience here? And I go, nothing. And they sit there like, really? And I'm like, yeah, like, and I don't know, maybe it's just me because I've been there for so long. I'm there so much that, you know, just to me is just another day at the office. You know, it's just how it feels to me. And to me, it's like one of the most peaceful places I think I can be in. You know, it's always been dear to my heart. You know, it's always, and I feel blessed, and I tell everybody this, I feel blessed that I get to tell the stories. You know, I get to tell the history. I get to keep that history alive. But yeah, but even like looking at everything as a skeptic, I mean, it's okay. Like when you watch me and Brooke's podcast there, she will hear a noise. She will hear a pop. She will hear and she'll stop and go, did you hear that? And I'm going, yes, the house.
And it could be the house settling. Or,
yeah,
you know,
there's been times though that there's been like distinct footsteps. I mean, we were in, okay.
But
we
you're
were
jump, in, but you're jumpy too, though.
I am not jumpy.
Okay, you can jump though.
I'm a little jumpy.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Anyway, but we were in the middle. We had our buddy Shane. He's really into the scientific side of, you know, like the paranormal, you know, and data analysis and all that stuff. I'm sure you've heard of people like getting like REM pods and, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. He can build all that stuff. He's a genius. He's really, really smart. And he built this sensor board, and it has like a whole bunch of gadgets and stuff like that on it. And it triggers like all this. So it measures like the electromagnetic fields in the room. If there's any changes
in the air,
huh?
The ions in the air.
The ions in the air.
It's the nerdiest thing you'll ever see in your life, and it's the coolest.
Vibrations, like if there's any vibrations, you know, that are triggered, you know, when we're not even in the room. It's very cool how he got this whole thing set up. So he had came up with his switchboard and was in the middle of an interview with us. He was on the podcast with us. And came all the way up from Michigan, and he was really excited. He's walking around the house, and then because he'd never actually done an investigation at the house, so he was like actually super excited because we did a little mini investigation afterwards. But we were talking about the sensor board, and we actually paused a couple times because we heard it sounded like footsteps or like a few knocks, like not like the heater kicking on, but like a different knock. And Bud, because he's a mechanic or he's a machinist, so he works in a factory all day long. His hearing is awful.
Oh, so you're going there now.
Yeah.
So you're saying I'm deaf. Okay.
No, but you have to admit your hearing is not the greatest. But me and
Shane, I tell people that. I've been telling people that for years.
Me and Shane would hear this or hear these noises. Of course, I don't want to jump to, oh, it's paranormal, but if it sounds like footsteps, I mean, and we're the only ones in the house and we're sitting down, I mean, that's a little weird.
You know, I just like giving you a hard time about it, though.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't be friends if we didn't give each other a hard time.
That ain't no lie.
But yeah, no, I mean, you know, and Shane, he is very on the scientific on the side of everything, you know. It's not, he's kind of in the middle between me and Bud. So he's a skeptic, but he's a believer, but he wants, you know, he wants to gather, you know, data and evidence and all that stuff, you know, and really looks for an explanation, which a lot of times there is an explanation for stuff like that, but it was very weird. And he said that even when he was staying the night, because he stayed the night at the house, you know, he came all the way from Michigan, so we were like, hey buddy, you can crash here, like you don't have to drive all the way back. So he went ahead and stayed. He said that he left the switchboard going and, you know, EVP and all that stuff going, a recorder going. And the switchboard actually has recording, like you can record, and he had a camera up and everything. And where he was sleeping, he said that there was some knocks and stuff like that going on, and he ended up finding out that it was when the heater would kick on. And then he said, you hear distinct footsteps coming in and out of the room as I'm sleeping. He was like, I'm surprised that didn't wake me up. He was like, because they were pretty loud. You could hear them. So that was really cool that he had an experience. So,
what room was he in, Brooks?
He was in Mamaw's room.
Oh, he stayed in Grandma's room?
Yeah, in Maria's room. And I kind of got cut off earlier because my kid wants to decide to mess with my Wi-Fi. So that's been fun. I love her for that. She had disconnected it. I was telling you a little while ago about whenever I was cleaning the steps and one of my first experiences when we were talking about the house is very like welcoming, and you kind of feel like it's kind of like your home away from home, really. For me and Bud, I definitely know it is. But when I was cleaning on top of the stairs and I was cleaning the railings and everything, my back was turned away from Grandma's room because her room, Maria Ayler, we call her Grandma, her bedroom is the very first room to the left when you're going up the stairs. So I was cleaning the banister and the stairs and everything and dusting them off. And I hear a footstep and a creak, and I almost turned behind me, but I knew that me and my friend were the only ones in the house at that time. So I was very nervous and did not want to turn around and possibly see something. I got pretty spooked, and I could feel someone staring at me like, you know, I don't know you and you're in my house. But the more I sat there and I was cleaning, it kind of lightened up a little bit. And I feel like a lot of people say that they have that interaction with Mama or when they're in her room, she comes off like a very strong energy. And then it almost feels like she kind of like lightens up, like once she sees you, you know, more often, or, you know, you talk to her and, you know, kind of share, you know, some of your life experiences with her. She feels a little bit more comfortable. So like the energy will kind of lighten up. But there's a lot of women that have walked in her room, and Kira, one of our one of our tour guides, Bud mentioned her earlier when we started. She's a wonderful girl, and she actually, her first experience at the Hannah House, she walked into Mamo's room and she said it was like a switch, and like her emotions just got the best of her, and she just started crying and she couldn't stop. And as soon as she walked out of the room, she said it turned right back off.
I want to go ahead and back that up and kind of tell what Brooke's talking about. This is even before Brooke came on board. I'm talking about this has went on for years, and I never explained anything to anybody. But when I would do history tours, like, and you can even ask Brooke, though, when I do history tours, I don't talk about the ghost stories. I don't talk about none of that. I stick to the history, you know, bada bing, right, bada boom, I'm done, you know. But not all the time. And this is so weird, and I can never explain it. And you and we, I just have been talking about, I'm the skeptic, okay? But I will admit this, because I can't explain it. But when I would do history tours and we would go in Grandma's room, not men, but women. And like I said, it doesn't happen all the time. It just once in a while. But certain women will walk in that room and just get this weird, heavy feeling. And I've had women walk in that room and go, nope, I've got to go. And they will turn around and leave and go and have to leave the room. And there's even been certain women would say they would have like a nauseous feeling or like a heavy feeling, and they would have to leave. They would have to leave the room. And it's weird because I've never seen a man do it.
Yeah. I wonder what it is about how it affects women.
I have no clue.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the historic Hannah House. For more information about the mansion, tours, and investigations, visit their website at historichannahmansion.com or search Historic Hannah House on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, you'll get everything commercial free. Become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can also sign up on patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.